Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and change makers. If you were to write a book about your life, what would be the captivating moments that would reveal themselves? Christos Kalogiriou mined his memories to share stories of his youth in his book, Wild Dogs, An Adventure in Adolescence. From attending a prestigious private school and being expelled, to eventually returning, graduating, and even receiving an Alumni of the Year award, he has lived a life of urban legend, entrepreneur, and prankster. In this conversation, he talks about the power of perspective, what he learned about business, his process for writing his book, why you should value your time, and what he learned living on the path of the hard way. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/563.
What am I endlessly curious about? Life, you know, the pursuit of wonder all the time. I think that's what keeps us moving, keeps us going.
Oh, I love that. What does the pursuit of wonder look like for you?
I just feel there's just so much to discover in this world. And anytime I hear somebody say something like, oh, I'm bored, or I have nothing to do, it's like, how is that possible? There's endless amounts of things to do. And, you know, if I can discover a fraction of them in my lifetime, I'd say I'm doing okay.
I love that you have that fraction approach, because it's just like, even a droplet of pursued curiosity and wonder is more than none.
For sure. Keep things moving, exciting. And it's unfortunate that a lot of people just don't do that. And I think a lot of times if people have near-death experiences, their outlook changes, and it's probably more lean to what I just said earlier. But there's an endless amount of things you can get into and discover and get out of your comfort zone more. And a lot of people, you know, it don't do that, but I certainly do. And life is good, you know.
Has getting out of your comfort zone come naturally to you?
No, I don't think that comes naturally to anybody. I think what's natural is staying in your comfort zone. Getting out of it and discovering new things and getting into new things, you find new hobbies that you never really understood how you lived without, or lived without doing them or pursuing them.
I love that. So what does your days look like? What do you do for a living?
Well, just recently I had a book come out, Wild Dogs, An Adventure in Adolescence, and people can pick that up any major outlet. All the proceeds go to a charitable foundation that I believe pretty strongly in. My days now look like getting up, having a coffee, hitting the gym, doing, you know, various things throughout the day, writing, emailing, keeping in touch with people. I try to go to the gym again later on in the day. And wow, every day is a little bit different, but more or less the same.
So are you someone who needs that consistent structure so that you can find the curiosity within a structure?
For sure. I think idle hands play a major part in that. I like to stay busy, but not just busy, productive. I mean, a person could stay busy, go out and party and whatnot, but that's not really productive. I mean, depending what you're into or what your occupation is. For me, I just need to have something on the go all the time, and not really spinning my feet, although sometimes that happens naturally. But I like to stay busy. There's a lot I want to do in life, and every day is a step closer to maybe try to get to those things.
Yeah. So what led you to write a book?
I went to a pretty prestigious private school. You know, it was a big part of my life. And I think the school's about just over 100 years old now. And there were just so many great stories that, you know, we talked amongst each other, and no one ever really like put them on paper or got them out there to share to other people. And then I had my own unique story of why I got kicked out of that school and how I went back and graduated. And I just kind of put them all together. So, you know, I've said frequently that it's my book, but it's everyone's stories. So that just doesn't mean just the people that I went to school with. That means I think anyone that's ever been a teenager can certainly relate to material that's in there.
Yeah, for sure. When I hear prestigious private school, I think of the movie Toy Soldiers with Sean Astin. I don't know if you remember that movie.
I do. Quite some time ago, but it had something to do with them being taken over by military, if I recall.
Yeah, they were taken captive. So it's like they called themselves misfits, and in some ways, it's
it's these stories of these students who are, this is their last chance. And right. they really find themselves in this kidnapping experience. But I doubt that was anything to do with your experience, of course.
Yeah, that's certainly a little bit out there, our schools. I mean, there were definitely kids that went there because they were probably, their parents, you know, they were on their last straw type of thing. For myself personally, I can't speak for a lot of kids that I went to school with, but for myself personally, I always struggled in school, as a lot of people do. And to get a private education where you kind of had more attention and more teachers that were available to you to help you progress was something that I really valued far after I graduated. I wouldn't really say I valued it when I was there, but just the amount of patience and time that individuals were willing to give me to help me succeed in life is something that I know a lot of people aren't fortunate enough to have, and I'm very thankful of that.
Yeah, it's interesting when I don't know how far removed from your teen years that you are now, but it's like when we think back to those moments of our youth, it can feel like so far away. So how did you capture the intensity of those moments?
I started writing my book in 2006, and I had graduated in 2005. So it gives you a rough idea of my age there. So, you know, even after that, little thing is like my writing process was maybe not orthodox. I didn't, you know, many times I went back to the school to visit and try to get back in that feeling and get back in that vibe to help me write. It actually didn't. Most of the material that was written in my book would come to me at very strange times in very strange settings. And I used my iPhone and I would just email myself parts and then I would piece it together after.
Oh,
and that process helped me. Mm-hmm. I plan on writing another book about what happened to me after I graduated. So there's obviously a gap between my first book and my grade 9 all the way up to whatever. But what happened in between there? What happened after you graduate? How did you find your way like most people? Because for me, I had, you know, many friends and other people that I went to school with the whole time. Maybe they were messing around with me and we were having a good time, but they were also, you know, hitting the books and I was not. So when they went on to university or whatever else, these other opportunities, I felt, you know, not self-pity, but I felt that I really didn't value my time when I was there. Because I'm back at my family's restaurant washing dishes. I'm like, wow, this is my life now. This is what you get when you screw around. And it took a long time to just kind of reach the end of that hard road. And you find yourself and you find what you're into. And that changes every day too. So it certainly is a journey with life and you're learning every day. And I think that that's kind of the motto, is just to value your time and to keep moving forward. And there's going to be some hiccups, but yeah, I guess that answers your question in a long way, but I think it's something that, you know, everyone can relate to, is kind of, you know, things are perspective and it's never over till it's over and just keep trucking, really.
Yeah. Well, I love that insight into the process, and I love that you were open to the memories coming at you at different moments and different times. And
yeah,
did you have any of those feelings when those memories are popping up where you're embarrassed by what happened?
Certainly, you know, there were situations where you just, because what's hard is that it was the me now writing about me then. And you have to do that as authentically as possible, which is quite difficult.
Yeah.
And I know the book isn't that really that long, but it took quite some time to do it in that regard. And you don't want to disrespect anybody. You want to make people laugh, but there's also a lesson to be told here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, of course there's things I did. And miraculously, a lot of the people that you'll read about when you pick up my book were very easy on me until it became to a point where they just couldn't be anymore. And I had done so much that it was like, this is enough. Enough's enough.
Yeah. So what were some of the pranks that you pulled? Because it sounds like you are part urban legend, part prankster.
Yeah, I think a lot of the individuals, guys and girls that I went to school with, more or less, we all pulled those pranks. They were just probably a lot smarter on getting caught than I was. Some pranks, man. I mean, some of the best pranks that had happened there, I had nothing to do with. You know, there was a graduating class when I was in grade 10 and these guys were in grade 12, and just blew my mind to this day. I think back and it just blows me away that they were able to seamlessly get into all the administration buildings, all of the educational buildings where the classrooms were. And they set up these entire buildings outside on the road. And it like perfectly where the pencils went, the desks. It was like probably took hours and months of planning. And I see a lot of these older students from time to time, luckily. And I always think about how impressed I was with that. And, you know, the common day-to-day stuff. I mean, pranks, we could talk for hours. Just picture having a sleepover with your best friends every weekend, every day for years. And that's what it was.
That has to be an unbelievable amount of planning and visualization to take an office and to transport it somewhere else.
Yeah, on the roofs of buildings, on the roads. And I mean, this is not in the brochure. This is not, right. It's not like the movie Heavyweights. Like, it's a place that typically individuals with athletic talent go to help pursue their careers. And, you know, kids have dreams that they want to make it to the NHL or the NFL or NBA or what have you. And Notre Dame sets the expectation that, hey, we want you to get there as well. But in the case that you don't, we're going to do our best to get you into a university, to get a degree, to pursue something when you get out of here. And it's an amazing place where individuals sacrifice their own lives and families to help strangers really try to pursue these goals. And I had all the opportunity in the world to do those things, not sports. I'm very uncoordinated, but with education, and I never went to university. I barely graduated, and that was at the fault of my own and nobody else.
Yeah. So what was your dream if it wasn't sports or, you know, an education?
I don't really know at that time. I think I wasn't really thinking more than a couple days ahead, which was the problem. Mm-hmm. And all of these teachers and administrators were really like, hey, think about the future and you can really be somebody and help mold you into somebody. And I was like, nah, I'm just, you know, more concerned than screwing around, which I did every day, which a lot of people did every day that I'm sure will listen to this and relate to. But now I think the dream is taking this book, turning it into a movie, doing some more for the charitable organizations that are involved, doing more for the school that has done so much for me and so many others that I'm close with. That's an incredible place. And I want to see it for another 100 years and educate another 100 years of more students.
Did you ever think that, I mean, I don't think it sounds like you did, but like, who would have thought that you would have like an experience where you didn't know what you wanted, and then now you want to actually support the school that you didn't take advantage of then? That's amazing.
Oh, to elaborate on that, I think what's even more incredible is even though I wasn't paying attention at the time, those lessons were being instilled in me when I didn't even know it. And you carry those, and we all have experiences like this, and they're not private schools. They're you know, girlfriends that come in and out of your life, or boyfriends, or jobs, or managers, or bosses that you have that really change the course of your life. And I had so much of that in a condensed amount of time that I didn't value, that now I spend a lot of time not beating myself up over it, but saying, okay, hey, you got all this information now. What are you going to do with it? Yeah. And I've become close with people that I wasn't close with when we went to school together, but you begin to get on the same wavelength as a lot of the people that you went to school with in different times, and life is timing. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
So what led to you getting expelled from the school?
So when I was in, trying to give you the shortest version possible, and I don't want to give too much away with the book, because I do want people to go out and buy it, please. When I was in grade 10, there were some students in the grade 12 floor, and they were the guys running the alcohol. Now, I'm sure a lot of people were running alcohol, but these guys were doing it in a really interesting, unique way. It was very organized. So you'd go to them and, you know, you'd pay them your $20 or whatever it was at the time, and they'd get you a flask of whatever liquor you wanted. So we used to do pizza orders. So a guy would go around and whoever decided to do it that week and say, hey, I'm ordering pizzas, guys. Okay, pizzas are $8. I think that's what it was then, but give me $10. And it was covering tax or the delivery driver or the tip or whatever else. And maybe they got a couple free pizzas out of it. These guys were doing the same thing with alcohol.
Wow.
So they were telling me, hey, if you go get 10 or 15 or whatever amount of guys it was at the time to get it to buy from us, we'll give you a flask for free. Yeah. Which is like one of the little, the smaller balls. So I was like, hell yeah. Like, and I was drinking every Friday and Saturday for 2 months. These guys had it down to a science, and that's how I got into it. But I knew in grade 11, when I came back, they were going to be gone. Mm-hmm. There was nobody really that I knew that was going to take that over. Mm-hmm. So over that summer, my grade 10 summer, I had discussed with my brother. We worked at my dad's. We had a pizza place, and me and him worked together like pretty closely. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him how much they spent on alcohol and how they got it. And we came up with this master plan that he was going to send me the liquor and water bottles, Bacardi white rum or vodka, so it would look like water. And I had a whole setup. I talked about how elaborate it was the year before. What I was doing was much more elaborate. There was way more many people involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there was a weekend coming up, we would start selling around noon on Thursday, because we didn't want the kids to start drinking too early. We were charging way more. My brother was watering it down, and we were making a fortune at the time, until it just got out of hand, and I got kicked out. That's the gist of it. Wow. It's a lot more intricate when you read it, but I'm the only student in the school's history to be kicked out, go back and graduate. And then, I had received an award years later, but I'm the only student ever to be kicked out and go back and graduate. And I have a lot of staff that believed in me and was like, hey, if you meet these requirements, we'll let you come back. And they didn't owe me that. And I'm forever grateful to them for that.
Yeah. Cause when you get expelled, what's going through your mind?
Well, your life is over. I mean, it's not cheap to go there, like any private institution. And I think my parents were more scared, and a lot of staff were up. Obviously, it's really hard when you really let people down that they don't want you to go, but they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. And I totally respected that. If you ask my parents, I'll tell you that me getting kicked out was the best thing that could have happened, because I thought I could get away with anything at all times, and I was reckless.
Yeah.
So I did go home, and I did get my grades to where they needed to be, which was a miracle in itself. And then I went back in my grade 12 year, and I completed, and I graduated with all my friends.
Wow. Now, I just got to emphasize the fact that, like, what a fascinating business training, though. Like, yeah. I mean, you learned a lot about business in that moment.
For sure. And a lot about loyalty and respect. Yeah. Like, even though it was criminal what I was doing, but I had guys that were, how we call them house leaders. So they're the guys that look after all the kids on the floor. Mm-hmm. And it kind of helps with their resume when they want to go to university and things like that. So I had guys that were house leaders in my dorm, but they had little brothers in the grade 9 dorm or little sisters or what have you. And they were like, hey, don't sell to my little brother. And I would make sure that they didn't, like, I respected that and that they didn't get alcohol. Because, you know, you're in grade 9, you're young. I mean, you're in any grade in high school, you're young. But some of these kids were like 110 pounds. Like, you can't be giving them alcohol. We had rules. Like, it wasn't a one-man operation. I had a lot of people helping me. I had girls that would tip me off when there was going to be a locker search in the guys' dorm, or guys tipping me off when there's a locker search in the girls' dorm. And we would just move the product around, move the money around. And we did this for about 2 months before it got, just way too heavy. And I just got way too, I became way too paranoid.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine too that in that paranoia, you're wondering if who's watching out for you to catch you.
Yeah. So for every 3 students, there's 1 administrator. So just to give you an example of a ratio, there at all times, there's about 100 administrators. And they near the end of it, I would say around like mid-October to the beginning of October, everybody knew what I was doing, but no one could catch me.
Oh.
Because I never kept it in my room. I had my roommate helping me, which you'll read about, very loyal guy. I still keep in touch with him today. And I mean, we're both in much better places than, I mean, better place. We weren't in a bad place. We were just doing something really stupid. But, you know, we've learned a lot from that experience. And were there kids that did worse than me at that place? Probably. And, you know, you think when the spotlight is on you, you think I'm the worst student that ever went here. Well, it's probably not the case. But I really, if you're not going to be hard on yourself, who's going to be? Mm-hmm. And learn from it a great deal. And just to be able to go back and have such a good relationship with so many of the staff that's that's still there. The president of the school was actually someone I used to represent me when I had an expulsion meeting. And we have a great relationship. He's now the president and was a teacher then, just a good guy. And I didn't like him a lot then. And I'm sure although he didn't say it, he didn't like me too much, but I'm an adult now. I get a lot of the lessons they were trying to teach me. And I carry that place with me, and I can't say it enough that I'm a better person because of it. And I don't know where I would be without it.
Yeah. Is he the one that wrote the end notes to the book?
No, that's a gentleman named Terry O'Malley. Terry O'Malley is actually the guy that ultimately expelled me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a great relationship too. So he's just a good dude.
Yeah. I just love that within the book, you had that connection so that it's not just like you having this external experience that you're sharing, but you're like weaving them into the past and present of the story.
Yeah,
I think
I thought Terry did an absolutely miraculous job of his end notes. That guy should write a book. just talking about the history and obviously emphasizing I wasn't the first person to do what I did. Maybe through the mail, yes, but there's always been individuals that have gone there that needed an extra little help. Yeah. And even though I didn't get the full help available to me or didn't pay attention to it, I was drastically better off even getting expelled than if I never had gone there.
So was it you that wanted to go back and finish, or were other people advocating for you to be able to come back and finish your schooling?
I think it was a little bit of both. It was me. I mean, these were my friends. I mean, we had lived together from grade 9 up until 11. I had become very close with a lot of the girls there, a lot of the guys there. I still keep in touch with today. Some of my best friends went to school there. So not being able to graduate with them just devastated me. So I came back home to Alberta, and I had them in mind the whole time, and I would keep in touch with them. I would like send them CDs and stuff of music just to, in my head, you know, you're young, you're thinking, I don't want them to forget me.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they're not going to forget you. But when you're 15, 16 years old, you don't think like that. Your friends are everything, right?
What an experience to be expelled, to go back, to graduate, and then to become an alumni of the year.
Yeah, I think that was in 2000 and, oh man, I don't even know the year, but we went back and I worked on the board briefly as well. And you just got to see a different perspective of how the school operates, you know? Mm-hmm. Here I am, just to see, like when I was a student there, I was one of these guys causing all this shit and making everybody's life harder. You get in a room with these people of like the real problems of like financial or like how to run the school or like what issues we're having. You're like, man, these people have a lot on their plate. Yeah. And now I'm one of these people lucky enough to have a seat at that table and to learn from it. And I learned so much about myself and what I wanted to do and how much people sacrifice to help someone like me get an education. So I just had so much more respect for the place, even above and beyond what I had already had.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, because as you have that experience, you know, you're on one hand, just like you said earlier, you're looking at the past through the lens of the present. And it's like, I don't know, that's a lot to reconcile and work through, but then they both power each other. It's,
yeah.
It seems kind of backwards almost.
I think there's so many people that I know. And it's unfortunate. I don't know why I have that quality, but it's like they have all these regrets. It's like, okay, well, you can't go back and change what you're regretting.
Right.
But you can, hey, how can I help to kind of, you know, kind of dissolve the negative stuff that I did in the back? And I'll never fully negative dissolve what I did. But it, in retrospect, is it that bad? Like I didn't wind up in jail. Thankfully, I probably didn't wind up in jail from the help of these people at that time. So to be able to go back and give back to them and see it from their perspective, I'm so humbled to have had that experience.
Yeah. And how have the relationships changed as you've grown up, as you've changed and evolved into who you are today?
Just perspective and understanding with a lot of people. And a lot of times I had someone very close to me that was a teacher of mine. Mm-hmm. Tell me, we went for beers like years after I graduated. And I was kind of like, you know, venting on like some of the things that I did. Yeah. And he's like, you know, when you're that age, you think that the sun rises and sets around you.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. I'm like, man, that sums beat up a teenager perfectly because you think that, well, I'm the worst student, or I'm the. It's like, no, man. Everybody's in this shit together. Like, yeah. you're not any different than anybody else. We have 300 and some kids to look after. You're just one of them. So you know, that really, like, it just stuck with me, and I just had so many people that were just so patient with me, man. I never had one teacher just give up on me, or an administrator. When I say administrator, that could be like coaches, substitute teachers, or, you know, the priest or the people, the maintenance guys. Everybody was just so, like, understanding because they probably saw it 100 times before.
Do you think if you never got caught, you would have turned out differently?
Oh, I try not to think about that. And truthfully is, I'm really glad that I got caught, because I don't know if it would have kept going. Mm-hmm. I might have got expelled and been told you can't come back. Mm-hmm. And then where would I have been? Mm-hmm. Like, it happened early enough on in the year. It was actually on October 31st. Man, we're coming up on 20 years. The end of this, wow. The end of October will be 20 years since it happened. If I would have kept it going, and let's say they didn't catch me until like the spring, mm-hmm. and they would have got testimonials from other people how long it was going on, I wouldn't have been able to go back.
Wow.
So I'm actually so grateful that I got caught. Yeah. But I also don't regret it. I don't regret what I did, because it that was just one more thing on my, you know, path of the hard way that helped shape me into somebody and someone I think is turned out to be pretty decent, and I'm still working at that.
Yeah. Ooh, I love that phrase, the path of the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a lot of teachers talk about flying under and over the radar, and that I'm always over the radar. And I always used to, people say, oh, you know, you take the easy way or the hard way. And I always took the hard way. You start to realize the hard way is not necessarily good or bad. It's just the path you're always going to take. Mm-hmm. So just know that it's going to be bumpy. It's going to be harder. And maybe it needs to be harder for me.
Yeah. For me, I always kind of attribute it to the path of the stubborn way. And so when you say the path of the hard way, I'm feeling the same kind of thing for myself with stubbornness. And it's just, it's not anything good or bad. It's just what your standard operating procedure. And I like the way that you're framing that. It's allowing me to kind of expand my thinking about it. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. No, and thanks for having me on today. And I hope it gives some people some perspective. I think you'll get a lot more if you actually pick up the book and read it. All the proceeds go to the Mandy Schwartz Foundation, which is something that I work closely with. And anyone who's ever been a teenager, I think you'll pick up from it. Any parent out there that wants to maybe send their kid away to get an education, who struggles in school, who's about to be a teenager, I think you'll get some talking points out of it. I really do.
Yeah. So who was Mandy Schwartz, and why is this organization important to you?
So Mandy went to Notre Dame when I went to Notre Dame, but she was a year younger than me. And Mandy was somebody that really valued her time when she went there. And what I mean by that was she excelled in sports. She really put her nose down with education. When she graduated, she went on to Yale University and played for the Yale Bulldogs. And I believe in her second season, she started getting fatigued, and they didn't really know why. And they thought she had like anemia. So they got her some blood tests, and the results came back that she had leukemia, which was a huge, obviously devastating for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I wasn't close with Mandy, but I knew her. And when I saw those videos with TSN or whatever other media outlets that were filming her on campus and talking to her parents, it really shook me up, because I'm like, man, this person was taught by the same people and really valued her time, and this is what's happening with her. And I did the complete opposite, and I'm completely healthy. So it certainly changed a lot of things in my life, and how I was living completely changed.
Yeah. I mean, what an amazing testament to her life that even now she still impacts your life.
Yeah. And a lot of people. I mean, I've become very close with her family, and they're just great people. Both of her brothers play professional hockey. Her father, unfortunately, just passed away in November, but he was a big part of my life. And the mom is just one of the strongest people I've ever met, and continues to push forward and does a lot, I'm sure, with her daughter in mind. And, you know, up until Mandy's last day, I remember her father told me that she was using like a stationary bike. And this is when she's going through therapy and everything for cancer. So very strong individual that, again, I didn't know personally, but her story is something that, I mean, if I can make 1/8 of an impact when I move on to the next life, I would be pretty happy.
That's amazing. Well, what recommendations would you have, Christos, for someone who wants to start documenting their youth in order to share what they've learned to others?
I don't think, for my process anyways, and if it helps people, great. Everybody's process is going to be a little bit different, but I never started in the beginning or started at the end. I just started. Something came to my mind, I emailed it to myself. And then I would pick and pull and go back from there, and you start to glue the pieces together. And then Scribe Media, which I can't say enough about, Tucker Max and everybody down there really helped to make sure that my book flowed properly. And they're my words and my stories, but they really explained to me how, you know, you want to write a book appropriate for the timing. And they did an amazing job. And I started writing my book after I read a book called I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell. Was written by Tucker Max. And I'm like, man, this guy wrote a book. I'm going to write a book. And sure enough, you know, 15 years later, this was the guy that signed me to publish my book. So life is crazy like that. And I'm just so humbled and thankful to Tucker and Natalie and Susan and everybody at Scribe. They've just been incredible and continue to be. So yeah, just one thing I would say is that you need help with this. It is my book, but it's not just me. It's all the staff that I had help with getting me to remember things, or students, or a great publishing company that can get it to where it needs to be. And it's not a one-man show. I believe I have about 12 people on my team with this, which is overwhelming, and everybody does a different thing. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to, you know, become a Wall Street Journal bestseller or USA Today. And I think I continue to hit other book lists, but everybody that buys it or hears about it, it's one more person that can get involved with Mandy's Foundation. And that's ultimately really what I care about in all this. So it's turning whatever funny negative stories that I had into something positive, hopefully.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Thank you.
As we wrap up our time together, what's one thing you want listeners to take away from our conversation?
The motto, and on all the other podcasts as well, is value your time. You know, it's never over. You can really get your life kicking at 80, I believe. There's something that you want to do, pursue it. You might not be able to achieve it, but you'll try, and you should.
Well, final question for you, Christos. What book, podcast, or resource is currently blowing your mind right now?
I did a podcast with these guys. I don't know if I'm getting the name right, but I think it's called The Steve and Dave Show. And they made me laugh pretty good. Those guys, people should check them out. I listen to a lot of Joe Rogan. I really like his approach to guests. But yeah, I don't really listen to a lot of them, to be honest. There's one called Missing Curfew that a good friend of mine, Scotty Upshaw, is on. It's a hockey podcast. Those guys are great guys, and they get great interviews. So yeah, those ones are great.
Be sure to check out Christos's book, Wild Dogs, An Adventure in Adolescence. And you can also learn more about the Mandy Schwartz Foundation, which the proceeds of the book go to support. I've included the link to the website in the show notes page at gwtw.co/563. If there's one thing that I hope this episode inspires in you, is to take stock of the people around you who not only believe in you, but also are impacting you by the example they set as they live their life, and in some instances, face the finality of their death. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.